This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome to the Friday Twilight Show. I'm Claire Cannon, and whether you're listening live or have downloaded the podcast, thank you for joining me. It won't be long until primary schools say goodbye to their Year 6s and secondary schools welcome them in as new Year 7s. So today I'm looking at how we support transition, particularly for those with SEND.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Thank you again for joining me today. This is a Friday Twilight Show, and as it is that time of year when we start to think a lot about change and start to think a lot about endings, and particularly for Year 6s as they get ready to leave primary school and move to secondary, I'm going to spend some time this evening, or whatever day it is if you're listening on the podcast, thinking about all things transition and how we support the students as they make what's a really, really big change. Now, there are lots and lots of things to celebrate for our Year 6s, especially once we get past SATs next week. There will be all sorts of things happening for them. There will be end-of-year performances, shows. They might be going on school trips. I know some people will do that following SATs. And there will also be people who, you know, schools who do things perhaps more towards June, July and the last half term of the year. You may also have other events, musical competitions, sports days in the summer term, and of course the all important link visits where the students get to go and visit their new secondary school. And I still remember actually looking forward to my visit. I actually had two because unusually Bedfordshire has a three-tier system. It's where I grew up, it's also where I worked. So actually when I'm talking about transition, I'm talking about transition today for Year 6 to 7. I have worked in that secondary system, but equally I've seen it from a perspective where you've got Year 4s coming in as Year 5s and also then going out as Year 8s, moving on to Year 9. So a few different sort of things to consider, perhaps on the age differences there. But tonight we are focusing on the Year 6s into 7s because that is what the majority of the country are doing. At any point this evening, if you have some ideas, if you have some thoughts, if you want a shout out, please do text in. So transition to a new school, it clearly involves and will affect, you know, all the pupils. It doesn't matter what bucket, if you like, they go into, whether it's you know, that they do have special needs, whether they come under the pupil premium, whatever, you know, it will affect all of them. However, for some of our students, we know that the transition is going to be more challenging, and they will likely require a lot more support, and particularly, as I say, those with SEND, special educational needs and disabilities. So that's what we're going to focus on this evening. So I hope, you know, what we talk about will be useful, and actually, you know, not just for those with SEND, but there will be things that perhaps you can use for other students as well. So, as I say, focusing on Year 6 to 7, although I'm acutely aware that there are colleagues out there who will be working in different systems, whether that's three-tier or whether you have infants, juniors, you know, there will be different forms of transition going on. Now, I am delighted this evening that I'm going to be joined by Katie Hall, who's a secondary SENCO, Emily Smith, who's a primary SENCO, who are going to come in, share their experiences around supporting transition. We'll hear from them a little bit later on in the show. I can see that they are joining at the moment, which is fabulous. And as I say, if anyone listening has any thoughts or suggestions about Year 6 to 7 transition, please do text in, because it would be great to hear from you. So before I invite Katie and Emily to join, I'm just going to start by sharing a couple of strategies that are used quite commonly. I would say most schools use, if not all of these, at least a couple of them. So for all pupils, transition can start to feel really real, I think, when they go up for their open evening. Usually they're quite early on in their year six, and they're going up to their secondary school or their high school to have a look round. Might be going to a couple of different schools depending on their area and what is available locally, but they will go and see those schools quite often in action with the, you know, the year sevens, eights, nines, you know, helping out in their departments. Quite often a good place to go and visit is the science labs, not just because I was a science teacher. There's usually something exciting going on there. And quite often the catering department, especially if you're feeling a little bit peckish. But, you know, the point being, there are opportunities early on in year six for students to go and see what secondary school is all about. Well, some schools now are offering tours during the daytime, and that may be just for adults, for the families, parents, carers, but it might be for the students as well, so that they can go and see the school in a working day. You know, what happens when it's not sort of the show time, if you like, of the open evening itself, but, you know, walking around the school, what are the students doing? What does it feel like to be there whilst lessons are going on? These are things that, you know, are in place for all pupils. So another thing that's, you know, I think, you know, almost 100% now, is that people will go up for a link visit in the summer term. Usually the students will meet their new class, meet their new form tutor, meet their year group leader, perhaps meet the pastoral team, and usually have something akin to a day in the life. So they follow a timetable that is very similar to what a year seven would have. Just gives them a little bit of a flavour of what to expect and what's to come. Something else that I've seen more recently, and I really quite like, is setting up a buddy system with older students, and they're quite often sort of allocated to a particular class. So they will be working alongside, popping in, perhaps doing some PSHRE type activities, some getting to know you activities, and again, just providing a little bit of a different link to just getting to know your new form tutor. And then the other thing that is also happening, some virtual, some online, but are parents' evenings for the year sixes, again, in the summer term quite often. And, you know, there are chances for the students and for their families to have a chat with their new form tutor, put a face to a name. Personally, I feel that that is better done in person. However, obviously, different circumstances, you know, different schools, different families will have all sorts of requirements. So for some, maybe a virtual, you know, that's better than nothing, definitely. So all sorts of different things there that are happening for all of the students that are going through that transition. And then those with special educational needs, disabilities, SEND, quite common now that they will get offered some kind of additional visit. That might be a one-off. It might be after hours when the school is quieter. It might be that they get a sort of gradual increase. So they might go in for an hour and then build up over time. There's different ways of doing that. It might also be an additional opportunity for those students to meet with their new form tutor. And for some of them, if they're going to have a key worker or some additional support, whatever that might look like, it may also be a chance for them to meet the people who will be involved in that. A couple of other things that I've seen that are really nice and really reassuring to the pupils are things like giving them a timetable in advance. Now, this, I think, if you're able to produce it for your students with SEND, actually, you could probably produce it for majority of them, if not all, because you must have run a timetabling system to be able to generate that timetable for an individual student. So lots of things there that, you know, are for children with SEND, but may also be beneficial for some other students as well. So what we're going to do is pick up on some other things that I think are really important around transition, and also not just the students, but perhaps the families as well. But first, just going to hear a little bit from our sponsors.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by Teach Well Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
Okay, thank you to Heartfelt and Bloomsbury for continuing to sponsor Teachers Talk Radio. Today we're talking all about how we can support Year 6s as they move into Year 7. Or as I say, for those of you in three-tier schools, I'm not missing you out, lower school, middle school, upper school, it might be that you are thinking about your Year 4s and your Year 8s. So, we had a little bit of a think about some of the common strategies for supporting students as they move from Year 6 into 7. I wanted to have a think about some areas that are perhaps not always given as much support. I'm not saying, you know, some schools, of course, do. If you're listening and you have some examples of your own, please do text in. So, as I said just before we heard from our sponsors there, I think we need to think about more than just the pupils. I think transition needs to be seen as a much more holistic sort of rite of passage, if you like. So, you know, we think of those pupils who have SEND, bit of a sweeping statement, but quite often they are the students whose families will also need a little bit of extra support around these times of change. So how do we make sure that everyone does feel that support? And the best piece of advice that I was given in my role as a SENCO, and I will say to anyone, is manage expectations. Because change can be tough. As human beings, we're hardwired to keep ourselves safe. Now, we haven't got lions and tigers chasing us around anymore, but by, you know, keeping things the same, in other words, predictable, it's much easier for us to keep ourselves safe. And that's physically safe, psychologically safe, emotionally safe. We can't completely remove the feelings of discomfort that perhaps link to change and around transition, but I think if we make sure we do as much as we can to provide clarity and communicate what those changes are going to look like, we can go a long way to easing, you know, those difficult emotions and perhaps some of the challenges that people are sometimes expecting, and that can almost become self-fulfilling. And it's just about actually having those conversations for me. So, you know, as a primary teacher, you have your class most of the day, and I will come to Emily on this in a minute. You have your class most of the day and you get to know them and their families really well. And that is one of the big concerns that comes up, is families worry about secondary staff not knowing their student as well, not knowing that young person in the same way. And, you know, completely get where that is coming from. So my question here is, do you have, as a primary school and secondary school, because this is about, you know, holistic, everybody working together, do you have an SEN link meeting where information is shared about the students? Sometimes I have heard, and again, I understand where this is coming from, I have heard GDPR being sort of cited as a reason that it makes it difficult, or it's not possible, or how do we get around it? But actually, if a child has got a confirmed place at a new school, at their new secondary school, it's actually in the SEND Code of Practice. If you want to have a look, it's section 5.47, that actually says it is your duty to make sure that information is shared. So it's not that you need to hold on to it. You do actually need to be having those conversations, and it is okay to be having those conversations. If anybody is interested in sort of any more background to that, the ICO, who sort of regulate all of the data sharing and things, you can ask three questions, or they suggest you ask yourself three questions. So the purpose test, have you got a legitimate interest in sharing information? Necessity, is it a necessary process to go through in sharing, whatever it is, in this case, SEN details? And the balancing test, so do the individual's interests override the legitimate interest itself? In this case, no. And I do appreciate you will have families who occasionally it's been difficult to get consent, or you've perhaps they've been unsure because they want their child to have a fresh start. But it is important that the new school have that information to hand about that young person. Anyway, let's just flip back to managing expectations, because, you know, parents can be very used to quick, easy contact with their primary school teacher or lower school teacher if you're three tier, because you have quite often got that face-to-face contact at the end of the day. So it can feel like a really big leap to go from what almost feels like an all or nothing at secondary. And that's absolutely not to say that secondary colleagues are not available, because of course they are. It's just that it's a different mechanism. People have got used to having those conversations day to day for 5, 6, 7 years, depending how long their child has been at primary school. And suddenly, instead of having that, they've got someone who's at the end of an email, perhaps on a phone, but it can easily lead to anxiety. It can easily lead to frustration. And we all know that sometimes that can lead to the odd keyboard warrior, which doesn't actually help anybody. So I think going back to what I was saying before, communication and clarity over expectations are really, really key. And I said to primary school teachers before, and I'm asking the question again of primary here, how can you bridge the change? What can you do, whether that's this term, whether it's next half term, that's not just helping the students because they know they're changing school, but actually helps the parents as well, the families, the ones who are perhaps struggling, you know, with their own anxieties. Is it that your year sixes can leave at home time without needing a parent to collect them from your room or from the playground? They're going to be doing it anyway in September. That's not that many months away. And we've got a 6-week summer holiday. So what can you do to help bridge that gap, to help them start to do some of those things independently? Maybe your class teacher will only be on the door on set days, Monday and Friday. And then, you know, again, they are there. We know they're there if they really are needed, but they're not in your face there as much perhaps as they have been. But why does any of this matter? Because I think relationships are critical. You know, families, as I said, they've built a rapport with you. They value it because it gives them reassurance. So over to secondary school is a suggestion. How about you get over to your primary school? I do get that there might be schools who are taking in from, you know, 10, 15, 20 primary schools. You can't necessarily get to all of them. I get that. But have you got your top 3 or 4 where the majority of your intake come from? Or have you got a student with a particular need that perhaps is going to need a little bit more in terms of support? You know, what if you went over and, you know, had a chat with your primary colleagues, have a meet and greet? Yes, it takes some time and, believe me, some diary coordination to set up as well, because I have done this. But in my experience, it was such an advantage. It was also a really nice time for everyone just to get together and have a chat, because how often as SENCOs do you get to do that? You're the only one that does your role in the school by and large, and the chance to network just in itself is actually really good. I think it's really good for people's well-being as well as your professional development. So think about how you can perhaps have those meet and greets, how you can get together and have those conversations, and potentially even involve the parents as well. You know, what can they come in on as part of those conversations? Can they come and have a chat on a familiar ground? You know, they're used to being in their primary school. It's a safe space to them, hopefully. So what if they were able to come in, see the new Senko, see their current staff that they know, and have some of those discussions before the students even get to secondary school, before any issues potentially start to appear? Anyway, that's quite a few ideas from me there. So we had to think about common strategies for all students, for those with SEND. I can see, Katie, I can see you are there and you are connected. I'm hoping that Emily is going to be able to join us as well. I'm just going to see if I can get you in there, Emily. I've sent you an invite, so that should be, there we go, I can see you. So, Emily, as you are live, would you like to just say a quick hello and introduce yourself for me?
Hello. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Brilliant. I am currently a Year 6 teacher and Senko at a small primary school in the Midlands. We're on the Leicestershire-Warwickshire border. So we have year groups of 15. That's our plan, but we have some classes of 19 and then we have year groups taught together. So 5 and 6 are taught together in the afternoons. Most of our children go to the same high school.
Mm-hmm.
So this year and for the last few years, the Senko comes out, she actually came out last week to the school, and we sit down and talk about the SEN children who are moving, and then we she comes into the classroom and sort of interacts with all of the children, but gets an idea of how those children are in the classroom, and so that she can recognize them. She's often spoken to parents beforehand at the open evening. So of the 3 SEN children that we have moving this year, she had spoken to 2 of their parents and already had some notes written down. And that happened before the head of year 7 comes to speak to everybody. So it's sort of 2 different visits, and that tends to work quite well.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said there about the Senko actually coming and visiting the children, not just visiting you, but actually visiting the children in their classroom. And I'd like to just hang on to that to pick up in a couple of minutes. Katie, can I just come over to you and ask you to introduce yourself as well?
Hello, I'm Katie, and I am a Senko at a school in London Borough of Sutton. It's a boys' Catholic school. We have 1,200 students, 240 on the SEND register, and 30 EHCPs at the moment. And we currently have about 59 feeder schools.
That's a huge contrast, isn't it, to what Emily's school is like. So what did you think when Emily was saying there about the Senko coming in and visiting? Obviously, you can't go out and visit all of those different feeder schools. So what are you doing to find out about your incoming students?
Well, we do go into our main feeder schools. I go in and I speak to the Senkos, but the other thing that we do that is quite unique, I think, to our school is I will take a team of LSAs in one afternoon and I will meet with all of the boys that are coming to our school, and we just have an afternoon of fun and games. It gives me a chance to meet the boys, gives them a chance to put names and faces together, and then we stay behind after school and we meet the parents at the primary school. This is a good opportunity for primary Senkos then to make appointments for parents that they think need to see me, but also I'm just there for anybody who needs to see me or who wants to see me. That's just one of the things we do. We've previously sort of done a lot of things. We have our open evenings. I guess for our school, transition starts in about year five. From year five, I start having parents in to look around the school, start building those relationships. So it's a long process.
Yeah, and I'm actually thinking about the sort of overlap there. So you are getting year five parents involved and you're starting that process deliberately.
Yeah.
Emily, can I come back to you? Because you said you've got classes that are taught in mixed year groups. So are there any parallels there, or do you find that it's slightly different process?
I would say that a lot of our year fives go to the open evenings. So I think children and parents are thinking about transition from year five and sometimes from year four, even though we really only have one obvious feeder school. Parents like to look around at others. It's often oversubscribed, so parents who are out of area like to look around some other schools as well as a second option. But I think especially for our SEN children, parents have been thinking about their high school, which high school they're going to go through for a long time. So, for example, we have a pupil in year four at the moment who has physical special needs. Her sister will be going to high school next year. So I know that when parents are thinking about a high school for the older child, they're also thinking about their younger child and whether it will be suitable for them. So I think the transition process, really, but everyone is thinking about that from year five. I would say probably with both parents and the SEN children especially.
And that's really interesting, I think, as well, because you've got that main feeder school that people are almost sort of not necessarily assuming that their both siblings will go, but I suppose there is that it is an expectation to a point. Would that be fair?
Yes, because once one child has been accepted, then there is the expectation that both children will go to that school. And because we're in quite a rural area, it's quite a lot. So children get buses. It's not that there's a huge number of schools to be able to choose from, especially in our county.
What I'm just thinking there, so when they move on to their secondary school and the parents, particularly if they've got an older sibling, so say the student with SEND is the younger one, does that, the fact that they already have a connection with a secondary school, I suppose what I'm thinking is, what are the pros and cons there? Because they've obviously seen an older sibling go through the school. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
I think a lot depends on the older sibling's experience of the high school and also the parent's perceived experience of the high school. I know that I've had conversations with parents where they have been unhappy with something that the high school has done, that they don't feel that it's been handled correctly, but are very much taking it from their child's version of event.
I think we're all familiar with that.
Yeah. So I think sometimes younger siblings are party to those conversations, so that there's a lot of, and even when you have, I think we all know that even when you have two children in a family with special educational needs, the two children are often very, very different. So one child, the younger child, sometimes feeling that then the before they go to high school that they can't succeed because their older sibling hasn't, even though we're very aware that they're two very different children. And I think that's something that sometimes comes through the family.
Yeah. And I think that for me goes back to that piece around managing expectations, doesn't it? And actually encouraging people to be objective, which is very hard, I think. It's very hard for anybody, and particularly when you're a parent, because obviously, you know, it's your child. You've got to make the right decision for them. Katie, I did notice you were going to had something to say on that one. So I'm just going to come over to you, because obviously the other way round, you're getting potentially 2 or 3, 4 siblings from the same family. How does that how do you manage that situation?
I think as a school, we really work on relationships with all of our parents. So we spend a lot of time building those relationships. So when siblings are coming in, you know, the families already know us and have got that relationship with us, so that they know that they can come to us with anything.
Yeah. And if you come across that situation where, you know, perhaps somebody isn't happy with how something's been dealt with or gone on, what is it that you find works in terms of the second, you know, or any subsequent siblings?
It's having those conversations. It's being available for those meetings, and being as open and transparent as you can and as honest as you can.
Yeah. And from that sort of, you know, primary school experience where they are in the same classroom for a lot of the time, they're coming up to, you know, you're a very big school. I think you said 30 EHCPs, 240 on the special needs register.
Yeah.
So how, for parents, you know, you said about being honest and having those conversations. Could you just tell us a little bit more about the types of things that you're saying that they find, you know, is supportive and is useful to know?
Well, we have lots of meetings before the students start with us at the open evenings. We have sort of, you know, anything that they're worried about, basically, they can come and speak to us. As a SENCO, I make sure that I'm available for all of the parents at any time, so they know that they can come in at any time, and we just talk them through the day. But I take them round the school when the school is working, which obviously you don't necessarily see as an open evening. I let them bring the prospective student around so that they can see the school working. And for our really vulnerable students, they will come and spend lesson time with us as well, and the parents can come to that. So I've already done it a couple of times this year. So boys that are coming to us in September that really have some complex needs come and spend some time with me in my classroom. We run a specialist provision called Catherine, where all of our EHCP boys start and the most vulnerable boys start. So they beforehand, they will come and spend 2, 3, 4 sessions in the classroom with their parents so they can feel what secondary school is like.
Yeah. And that provision that you talked about, you mentioned it to me actually when we were having a chat and sort of setting up you joining me this evening. I wondered actually if you could tell us a little bit more about how that works, because I think that's quite special that you've got a really sort of bespoke arrangement for them. So yeah, just curious to know a bit more about it.
Okay, so the Catherine class started 4 years ago when we were faced with a large number of EHCP boys coming into the school. It was, how are we going to manage this? And so we put together, we looked at all of the issues that these boys have coming from primary, going into secondary. It's a huge, huge transition. Forgetting the work, forgetting the lessons. It just takes a lot for them to come. Everything is just so much bigger. So we formed Catherine, and Catherine has a static classroom, and I teach them for 14 hours a week. So I'll teach them English, maths, geography, history, RE. They have other specialist lessons in reading, oracy, spelling, and they also have emotional regulation, sensory regulation, and occupational therapy. And the beauty of it is that our educational psychologists, our speech and language therapists, yeah, all come and work with these boys in the classroom. And the boys that are in Catherine, they don't have to have an EHCP, and they can be with us for as long or as short as it takes to get them integrated and ready to go totally mainstream. So some boys graduate after half a term. Others will be with us in that provision for the whole year. And if at the end of the year that provision is still needed, then we transplant that into year eight. But instead of it having that static base, we start making them a little bit more independent, a little more resilient, and they start moving around the school, but they stay in that small nurture class.
Yeah, that is incredible. And I think, you know, the provision that you've got there, just, you know, that could almost be a show in itself, I think. you're just doing wonders for those boys, and just hearing, I can hear in your voice actually when you're talking how much you believe in that group. How many of them, you say that they, if they do need it, they can stay through into year eight. And I like your sort of almost like transition within transition there, you know, that you're sort of phasing them back in. But what, how many of them do still need it in year eight, or are, you know, are you getting most of them integrated in year seven?
It's really difficult to answer that, because some join us at the start of year seven, but the other way that the provision works is if a child starts in mainstream and is suddenly, we're very aware that they're struggling, then we can pop them into that Catherine provision at any point. So it's some in, some out. So at the moment, I started with 16 in September. The class is never bigger than 16. So there's myself and two LSAs. And then I'm down to 12 now, although I've got another one starting with me on Monday. So it's whatever is needed for that particular child. You know, no two children are the same, and we have to celebrate these differences and really sort of come alongside these children and their families and support them the best way that we can. My first lot now are in year 10, and they are doing absolutely brilliantly. Obviously they were with me during COVID, and they stayed in school all the way through COVID, and it's that consistency that I think really benefits them.
It's so lovely to hear that you've done that, and just amazing. I'm just going to say, if I can see, we've got a couple of people listening in live this evening, so if anyone's got any questions for Katie, please do text them in, because we can share them, any thoughts. Emily, can I come over to you on what you think about Katie's provision?
I think that's amazing that you can do that. I mean, as a small primary school, and also being on the border between two counties, us trying to access support of people like occupational therapists and speech therapists is a real nightmare, because we get battered backwards and forwards between who's where the doctor is located, where the house is located, and also because you have a small number of children, it means we've got a fairly small number of staff, and that's a real trouble. Before I was a primary school teacher, I taught for 20 years in secondary, and as the sort of the 3 years before I left secondary teaching, so it would have been around 2015 up to about 2019, when year seven came in, they had a similar setup, not as good as you were talking about, but where each year seven class had the same teacher for about half of the week. So that same teacher would teach English, geography, history, RE, and the PSHE. So in year seven, there was that sort of mixed curriculum, and then they went to other lessons. So it was like a stepping stone to high school, if you like, and the whole of year seven were taught in that way, and I think that helped with transition. a lot, but it was brilliant for the SEN children generally, but for the more, a lot of the children were ready to be at high school.
Yeah.
So it felt like they felt that they were being held back by it, because one of the things they'd looked forward to was going to different teachers for geography and history and all of those things. But it really helped a large group of children who would have found the transition straight to being in 25 different classrooms a week, who would have found that very difficult. But the ability to have a group of children who are struggling and the access to give them what they need, I think, as mainstream schools, both primary and secondary, are having to develop their provision. A mainstream school now is not what a mainstream school was 10 years ago. And we can't just say, well, this is what we do. I think we have to all be looking for how we can have positive impacts on those children who struggle most to keep them in the system.
And I think, you know, what Katie has got set up is amazing. I'm guessing there's a lot of schools that perhaps would love to do that. And as you said, Emily, you know, staffing, budgets, there's lots of constraints that can make that feel quite tricky. I think it's interesting you mentioned about that secondary school that was teaching the year seven in sort of like a hybrid model. And I get where some of those students are coming from, in that they perhaps wanted to be more independent. I always keep coming back to the phrase managing expectations. You know, I'm not part of that school system, so I have no idea. But maybe was there something around those students' understanding of what was going to happen that perhaps might have helped? And I suppose the other thing is, you don't know what, you know, we don't know what if. If those students that thought they were ready had gone straight into sort of your typical secondary school, you don't know, do you? They might have actually been the ones that had found it a little bit tricky, not all of them. But I guess, you know, it is that thing, isn't it, of not knowing. They coped fine with what they had, which I think is a good thing. Who knows what would have happened if they'd have had a different opportunity. Katie, I'm just going to come back to you for one more thing before we have a little bit of a break for the news, and then I'll come back to both of you on a slightly different note. You said that they're going to be year 10, aren't they? The first Catherine class cohort that have gone through. So in terms of their year 11 outcomes, what impact do you think it has had? Again, we don't know what we don't know, but what impact do you think it's had? Or what if they hadn't had that Catherine class, where might they be?
Well, looking or thinking back to that first cohort, I had boys that had been recommended for going to special school, and parents had taken a risk with mainstream. And these are boys now that are predicted sixes, sevens, if not higher, for their GCSEs. It really gave them a chance just to, it's that whole nurture, getting them stable in secondary school. I just wanted to add that they learn with me, they learn exactly the same as the other year seven students. It's just done in a very different way. It's a lot more multi-sensory. But we still learn, they're still learning the same skills, the same knowledge as the other year sevens. But we just go at a little bit slower pace, and we do things differently.
So your curriculum is the same. So because you were saying about wanting them to integrate back in, so obviously they need to follow the same, you know, whatever maths are doing, so that when they do go back in, they're not then struggling with gaps.
I only have one exception, and that's in English, and that is the book that we read is a different book because basically it covers things like being different, being bullied, being alone, a lot of things that our SEN students can feel, and that then gives us the opportunity for us to explore those issues and to start unpicking some of those preconceived ideas that the boys have.
Yeah, that's really, you know, that's that consideration, isn't it, for their needs, but still running in parallel, I think, to you know, the rest of their year group, which is really lovely. Because, as you say, when you then get them back into the rest of year seven, when you're integrating them, they can do that. I suppose it's probably not always seamless, but as you know, as good as it can be, that they can make that extra transition, but supported. Right, what I'm going to do is just take a quick break now so we can hear from our sponsors, hear the news, and then Katie, Emily, I will come back to you for your take on something still related to transition, but something slightly different as well. Here we go with the news.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio News with John Gibbs. The first story this week is once again Ofsted. Following last week's news that, contrary to advice from the cross-party committee in the House of Commons, the government would persist with single-word assessments of schools. This week, Ofsted Chief Sir Martin Oliver announced that he would like Ofsted inspections to feel more like a peer review. At the Schools and Academies show on the 2nd of May, Sir Martin indicated that Ofsted had embarked on a reform journey, and he further noted that he wanted Ofsted inspections to feel like, in some ways, a peer review system. While Ofsted and Sir Martin have launched the Big Listen consultation, a group of former Ofsted inspectors, academics, experienced teachers and head teachers, led by Professor Colin Richards and Frank Norris MBE, have launched the alternative Big Listen. They've set up their own website and are accepting responses and views from across the education world. The 50% rule in English faith school admissions, introduced in 2010, stipulating that where newly established academies with a religious character are oversubscribed, at least 50% of their places would be open places, i.e. allocated without reference to faith, is to be scrapped in plans announced by the government. The government also plans to allow churches and religious groups to open faith-based schools for children with special educational needs, which campaigners warned could raise ethical issues. Proposals to scrap the 50% cap, which only applies when schools have more applicants than places, are opposed by Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, on the grounds that it would be divisive and likely to penalise disadvantaged children by denying them access to local schools. While the government believes that faith-based schools give parents greater choice, encourage better behaviour, and also academic outcomes, Andrew Copston, the chief executive of Humanist UK, is quoted as saying, "The proposal to allow 100% religious discrimination in new state faith schools will increase religious and racial segregation." Teaching assistants are again in the news this week. While recent stories of their declining numbers, their stagnating pay, have been regular features of the news, this week, a survey reported in Secondary Education News involving 6,000 teaching assistants in England and Wales found that 39% are covering classes for at least 5 hours a week. A further 15% say they are leading full classes for at least 11 hours a week. National guidance states that support staff should not actively teach any classes they cover. But 75% of the teaching assistants said they have ended up teaching rather than supervising. Astrea Academy Trust, which controls 26 schools in the Yorkshire and Cambridgeshire area, is seeking to hire a new executive head teacher on a salary between £116,000 and £133,000 a year. These salaries might seem generous in the light that the St Ivo Academy, a secondary school in St Ives and run by the Trust, is making cuts for classroom resources, but it should also be placed in the light that the new executive principal position comes with three layers of management above it. Above the new executive principal would be secondary regional director for Cambridgeshire, Jo Mayhill Johnson. Above her, in the Trust's hierarchy, sits Richard Tutt, its director for secondary education, and above him, Rowena Hackwood, Astrea's chief executive. And the number of Astrea's employees paid at least £100,000 a year has increased from 7 to 10 from 2022 to 2023. It is reported that Ofqual have warned that exam results, GCSE and A-level, will be down this year. This will be the result of the return to pre-pandemic conditions, meaning candidates had no prior warning of what might be coming up in the exams, and the lost learning that resulted from the COVID pandemic. In an interview in Education Week, the statistician Dennis Sherwood once again stated his view that A-level and GCSE grades are only reliable to one grade either way. If you wish to listen to interviews with Dennis Sherwood, you can find them in the Teachers Talk Radio back catalogue, or follow many of these news items on the weekly review on Sunday mornings. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news with John Gibbs. Thank you for listening.
Okay, welcome back to the Twilight Show this evening. We have been thinking all about how we support Year 6 to 7 transition. I'm delighted to have Emily Smith and Katie Hall, who shared some fantastic ideas already this evening. Emily is a primary Senko, and I loved what you said about having your secondary Senkos coming down and seeing your students in the classroom. So they're seeing them, you know, somewhere that they're familiar with, and just getting a chance to work out who's who, what works for them, and then obviously they can take that away and have a think about how that translates to their secondary school. And Katie, your provision, your Catherine class, it was amazing to hear all about that, and I hope we can pick up on that a little bit more in just a minute, because I said, you know, I wanted to have a think about some more ideas around transition, but from a slightly different angle. So, you know, transition is a period of big change, huge change. But actually, you know, as much as we focus on this is going to be different, this is going to change, this won't be as it was before, actually, can we use the idea of sameness to support some of our students' needs and our parents as well? Now, that might seem odd to use the idea of sameness because it is such a big change, But as I mentioned earlier on in the show, as humans, we do have this kind of subconscious driver to keep ourselves safe. I'm just going to say, you know, we all have little micro routines, almost subconscious, that help us manage day to day. And what they do is they give us that sameness, they give us some predictability, but also they kind of reduce our cognitive load because we're not having to think about these things. And to give you an example, next time you go to put some socks on, notice what foot you put your sock on first and then try putting it on the other foot. It's actually quite weird and it makes you think. And essentially what we're doing by saying to students, you know, let's concentrate on some things that are going to be the same, is we're helping them to realise, when they might not have realised for themselves, that there are things that will still follow that pattern that they're used to and will help them to emotionally regulate and to reduce some of that cognitive demand. So what sort of things might be staying the same? Now, obviously, it will depend on where a student lives, but, you know, are they going to be walking or driving, travelling past the same landmarks? You know, if their primary school is down the road from their secondary school, there might be things like that that actually are really familiar to them, and that's not going to change. They're still going to walk past that supermarket. They're still going to walk past that church or whatever. Is it that they've got a peer in their class, a friend from primary school, so a face that is the same, somebody that they know? It's a small thing, but when we focus so much on change and what's going to be different, it can be really easy to forget those little things. It might be that the lessons are called the same things. They're still going to have maths, they're still going to have English, they're still going to have PE. It doesn't matter if they're in primary school or secondary school. It could even, for some students, need to start right back at home. You know, are they still going to do things in the morning in the same order? They get up, they have a shower, they eat their breakfast, they brush their hair, they pick up their school bag, and that order is something that is part of their routine, like your sock, putting it on the same foot all the time. It could even be broken down even more to eating the same breakfast cereal, if that's something that helps them. And again, sweeping statement, but that's, you know, could be something to think about for your students with things like autism and ADHD, where routine can be really, really helpful. So, Emily, I'm going to come over to you first, if that is okay. I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, possibly, but just wondered what you think about using the idea of sameness and if there's anything that you are already doing or that it's perhaps making you think you might do.
I think one of the things that we talk about all the way through year six is how similar the work is. So last week when the Senko from our main high school came, we were just doing four questions on the board, practicing for SAT. And she said two of those are GCSE questions. Right. And having been a secondary school teacher, I know, for example, that there are some pieces of work that would have gained the old C grade at GCSE that would not gain greater depth in English at the end of Key Stage 2. Because of,
you've just designed a whole new show there about,
yeah, because of things like because of things like semicolons, which are really important in year six but become completely unimportant as you go through school. So I think we talk quite a lot in year six about how this work they're doing now, especially in maths, when they get into year seven, there's not a huge jump. A lot, the primary curriculum, specifically for maths, is really heavy, and there's very little extra that comes in early. And that's something that the children worry about quite a lot. They worry that they're not going to be able to do the work. And then children come back, sort of maybe at Christmas or something, and they'll go, "Oh, we just, it's the same. We already knew it. It's just a little bit more." So it's not the big jump that lots of children think it will be. And I think we talk a lot about how that is the same, because the move to high school, a lot of it, the main things that change are the organisation and the movement and the having to get with, like, to know so many new people and places and routines.
Yeah.
And I think them knowing that actually the work that they're doing, there's not a huge leap. There is a jump, but it's nowhere near as big as I thought it would be. For example, when I moved from secondary down to primary, I was absolutely blown away with what year six were doing, that I knew was covered in year seven and eight and nine in high school.
Yeah. And interestingly, I've just seen a comment from, or two comments from Paul here. I'm actually going to start with this second comment, because Paul has said secondary seem to do their own assessments in autumn one anyway, and set the children based on that. And I think that was probably, Paul, a response to what we were saying, or what Emily mentioned there about the comparison and the overlap between SATs and GCSEs. Katie, can I come to you on Paul's other comment question? Because Paul has said, should primaries provide a set of groups for children to secondaries who would then be able to have them for the first set of class lists? Would that be useful? So I'm guessing that's around having a list of names and saying perhaps these would be good together, or perhaps avoid putting
these two
together.
So we do that anyway. Yeah. When we go to meet with the SENCOs, we will ask if there's only sort of a few children going, who they get on with, perhaps who they don't get on with. And we will always try to put somebody familiar in a class, always.
So they've got somebody that they know.
May not be a best friend, but somebody that they get along with. Likewise, if there's somebody that they really don't get on with, we do make an effort to make sure that they are not together as well.
Yeah. So sort of giving them the best chance to succeed, isn't it, really? Yeah. Go on, Katie, go on.
In Leicestershire, we finish school about a week after the SATs results come out. So the SATs results really have no impact. I don't know whether they do anywhere anymore, but the SATs results have no impact. So we're asked to give the children a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 for their ability. And that's only really used to make sure that there's a mixture of children in every form group.
Right.
And they're taught in forms for the first, up until at least Christmas, and then set after that.
Okay. So they've got some familiar faces in their form group, as well as that mix of abilities. And then once they've got a bit more used to things, they're then being perhaps separated out a little bit more. Katie, just, you know, we're talking about using the idea of sameness, and I think your brilliant model that you've got with your Catherine class is obviously giving them a lot of sameness in that you talked about the static classroom. I wonder what else is the same for that. I know you're obviously a different school and a different building, but what else are you doing that's making it feel as same as it can?
I think it is. It's all down to those routines. We're creatures of habit, and routine makes children feel safe. So we try and model a primary routine as much as we can to start off with, and then just implement those changes slowly for those in the Catherine class.
Yeah. And what do the, but I'm thinking now about the parents of those students that are in Catherine class. Mm-hmm. Are they saying anything different about transition perhaps compared to some of the other parents because of that extra support and that sameness and routine that you're giving them?
I think the parents of the Catherine students really appreciate the fact that they have contact with me every week. So they will know what's going on in class, what we're learning. They will know about the homework. They celebrate, you know, every little bit of progress, because for some of these students, when you get to secondary school and you look at the reporting, the way they do the reporting, it's all numbers. Yeah. And it's very hard then to show progress that might be something as simple or as difficult as eye contact.
Yes.
Or speaking out in class. So by keeping in contact with those parents, they are celebrating all of those milestones, which are huge for them. And the other thing that is different for the Catherine students is the reporting system. I will write the reports for all of the boys in Catherine. They don't get the numbers.
Okay. So actually what you've done is taken that idea of sameness, not just for the students, but for their families as well, because they will be used to the level of contact that you're providing, but also that written, more descriptive way of reporting back what their student is doing, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Emily, just on some of the things Katie's mentioned there, do you think those things are happening, perhaps they might be in their own way, but are they happening for your students as they move up to, you said predominantly they all go to the same secondary school. Are they getting anything like that experience?
I think that there is an awareness. So I think right from the start, some children I know, for example, have already been highlighted for some social communication groups so that they can start as soon as they get to high school. The reporting system is completely different and remains the same for all children across the school, which I know is something that the way that it works, I think it's not just the parents of SEN children, but all parents who find that difficult, because it's sort of, you don't understand the parameters. Even as a teacher, I still find some secondary schools' reporting systems really confusing. But I think I think a lot of the things that we've been seeing in primary for a few years are now feeding through into secondary. And I think the secondary that our children go to are starting to realise that they're going to have to make more. I think they're believing that they're going to have to make more changes. So I know that next year, for example, that school has two children starting who are working at Key Stage 1, the beginning of Key Stage 1 levels. And that's something that they've not had before. It's quite an academically driven school. So I think over the next few years, lots of schools, secondary and primary, are going to have to rethink what they think of as mainstream.
That's a really interesting point. I mean, my background is SEN, and then I was working in alternative provision, and actually we saw a very similar pattern there, that the students who were sort of traditionally your alternative provision students, you know, the need has shifted everywhere. You know, mainstreams are dealing with more complex needs, which then filtered through to alternative provision and presumably then to like your full specialist settings as well. Everyone is dealing with a higher level of need than they were before. And I think it's not just the higher level, it's also the higher numbers of need. Katie, I'm just thinking in terms of you talked about your class actually having a capacity of 16. Is that going to be enough?
Well, the way that it's going, Probably not, because we know that the number of SEND students is just growing in such a huge rate at the moment. And I think, sort of quite rightly, secondary schools are going to have to be thinking about how they're going to cope with this.
Yeah.
So will Catherine be big enough? It is for now. But that is something that we are going to have to look at as a school as time goes on.
And I suppose, you know, whether you replicate that in, you know, like almost like a clone, so there's Catherine 1, Catherine 2, so to speak, or would you potentially be looking at the type of need and doing something slightly different, you know, depending on your SEMH needs compared to, say, some other type of need?
I don't know is the answer. I think perhaps we're going to have to, it will come to a point where the capacity for Catherine will have to grow, and there may have to be a Catherine 1 and a Catherine 2. But you can never be sure of the type of students that you're going to get. If I look at my cohort now to the cohort that I started with originally, those the need groupings are so totally different. We're finding we're getting a lot more trauma and anxiety, mental health now than we ever have, which is why as a school we've also done a lot of training with teachers, and we are a trauma-informed school, and so all of our teachers are trained in trauma-informed practice.
Yeah, and that's, I think that is, you know, as Emily said as well, those sort of thinking forward, thinking how are we going to prepare for what is coming? We know it's going to cut. It's already there, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
How are we going to prepare to continue meeting that need, and, you know, as that need continues to grow in itself? Katie, I'm really mindful of your time. It's been amazing talking to both you and Emily. And I'm just, while I've got you, Katie, and Emily, we'll come to you in a second. Can I just ask, you know, having had this conversation this evening, is there anything you would say to primary schools that are, you know, getting their students ready? Anything for secondary schools to take away? And is there anything that you're going to take away from the conversation this evening?
I think everything at the end of the day still comes down to relationships, whether it's the relationships with the children, relationships with the primaries, forging those really strong relationships with the primaries, and the relationships with the parents. If you've got all of those, then you have got that foundation to build on, and then you're doing something pretty special then.
And I love that, because, you know, it is that relationships are so crucial, aren't they? And as you say, if you get that bit right, you can kind of then play with whatever else you do, and you know, transition for one school will look quite different to what another school does, whether that's local context, whether it's numbers, whether it's types of needs that are coming in. But yeah, it all comes from the point of having that secure relationship. I love that. I think that's brilliant. So thank you, Katie, because it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you on a Friday night as well, the end of the week.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been really, really good. Emily, can I come over to you? It's the same sort of thing, really. You know, as we, you know, want to say thank you to you, first of all, for giving up your Friday evening. But from a primary's perspective, hearing what Katie said, is there anything that you're going to take away for yourself, for your school? And is there anything that you think, from a primary's perspective, you know, other schools could be doing?
I agree that relationships are key, and I feel like there's that relationship between staff, so that now, having got to know the SENCOURT, the secondary school, for a couple of years, I feel that I can say to her things that I might not necessarily write down, and that helps her to get more of an understanding. So I think that relationship between different members of staff is really important, because I think sometimes we're very protective over our thing. So as primary teachers, we can look and go, oh, well, they've done that and they've done that. And I know as a high, when I was teaching at secondary, it was like, oh, what are the primary? And you can get very protective over your bit.
Yes.
And I think trying to move away from that is really good for everybody, but very difficult.
So I think we're all agreed on, you know, the relationships being really key, and, you know, whether that is school and home, school and pupil, or actually school to school. And I like your point there, actually, because I think we can quite easily get sort of stuck in a little bubble of our school, and it almost becomes like us and them. And actually, it's just us, isn't it? We're all educators. We're all actually out to support students to get the best outcome. So, yeah, really, really like that point there on relationships and making sure that, you know, what we're doing is shared by everybody, understood by everybody, and that, you know, we're all having those conversations. I'm going to say thank you to both of you there. We've got a little bit more left of the show to go, but by all means, if you need to head off, completely understand. It's been really, really lovely having you both on this evening. We're just going to hear once more from our sponsors, and then I'm going to finish with my usual little wellbeing word for the weekend.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more, and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers
Talk
Radio.
Okay, thank you to our sponsors, Heartfelt and Bloomsbury, once more. Been really lovely to talk to Katie and Emily this evening. They've shared some really fascinating insights, actually, about how they each support transition from a primary and a secondary perspective. I just wanted to move on now for the last little part of the show. I always finish with a bit of a sort of well-being focus, call it a well-being word, for the weekend. And given that we've been talking about change, but actually towards the end of that conversation, how we can use sameness to support, and actually Katie did pick up on emotional regulation, and Emily also talked about, you know, students with those types of needs. Actually, how can we start to regulate ourselves? How can we re-regulate ourselves if we've perhaps been struggling, or actually just do things that help us, whether, you know, we don't need to be dysregulated before we actually do some of these techniques. So my word for this weekend is grounding. The reason being, as I say, talking about change, and we can often react quite negatively. Usually it is around a little bit of fear, a bit of anxiety, Sometimes you might feel like you wish it wasn't happening. Sometimes people feel like they just want to leave things as they are. It was quite comfortable, thank you very much, and I don't really want it to be anything else than that. And I think, you know, it's fair to say we've probably all felt like that at some point. You know, not just as a student ourselves, but it could be life events, could be things that actually are positive, like moving house. You know, we can still have those reactions. It might be you've got a new job, you can still have those reactions. So we talked about things that we can do to help feel safe, to help feel regulated, and to kind of calm ourselves down. So this idea of grounding, what's it all about? There's lots of ways that you can ground yourself. You can quite simply sit on a chair and just notice the fact that you are touching the surface of the chair. You might want to lay on something. That can work really well for some people, is actually just to lay down. Usually flat on your back seems to be the thing that people will say is sort of feels most comfortable. And thinking then, you know, about the fact that your feet, backs of your legs, your back, your shoulders, you know, they're all touching that same ground surface. Some other things that you can do as an extension of that, or perhaps something slightly different. What about standing barefoot on the grass? Even if it's raining, actually, and for some people, they prefer that sensation. And I'd invite you actually to get some of your students to try these things as well as for yourself, because co-regulation and having those shared experiences can be really positive, especially for some of our young people that do have additional needs. Now, I was saying earlier on about the sock and try putting your sock on the other foot. For me, I would not be trying that after trying a grounding technique, because I would probably end up back on the ground myself, which might really defeat the point of doing it all. But anyway, that is just me. What else? What else can we do to ground ourselves? What can we do to kind of get in touch, I suppose, with our senses? So you may have heard, maybe not, of the 5-4-3-2-1 technique. So this is around noticing what is happening, what is around you in this moment, in the here and now. So it's your senses. You could, for example, name 5 things that you can see. You don't have to name them out loud. Nobody even needs to know you're doing this. It might be that you're just saying them in your head. You could decide that you write them down another time, but think about 5 things you can see. And then you count down 4, 3, 2, and 1, you know, things you can touch, things you can hear, things you can smell, and things you can taste. Some people like to pair them so that they will always do 5 things that you can see or 3 things that you can touch, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that you are just focusing on you and your environment in the here and now. You know, right now, what is it that is around you? And it is, as I say, all about grounding and just trying to bring yourself back to a point where you can regulate. That senses one is quite a nice one to do with students as well, because you will have some that actually like to physically reach out and touch something. You know, if you're stood with them, perhaps it doesn't have to be in a sensory room, it could be in a normal classroom, but 5 things you can touch, it's absolutely fine if they want to go and say, well, I can touch the wall, I can touch the carpet, I can, you know, touch the whiteboard. The different textures, things that, you know, that they want to go and explore, if it is helping them or you to just get that sense of ease again, then there's absolutely no problem with whatever, you know, doing it in a way that works for you. Couple of other ideas for grounding. You will see a lot, if you look online, around sort of deep breathing, meditation, things. Again, they're all about sensory regulation. They're all about bringing you down, bringing you that sense of calm. And, you know, there's a lot going on neuroscience-wise. that could be a whole other show, actually. And perhaps I will do a show towards the end of summer term on well-being when we get towards the summer holiday. But music is another one, and that can be listening to music. It can also be playing music. And you don't have to be musical to do that. You know, go and sing in the shower, or, you know, dance around somewhere. You know, it doesn't have to be the world's best performance by any means. It is just something that helps you feel good, helps you feel a bit better. So I'm just going to leave you with some of those ideas, really, as we sort of come towards the end of the show, to think about what you might do this weekend. If you've never done any of those techniques before, you might find them slightly odd, but that's normal. If we do something new, it can feel a little bit different. It can feel sometimes uncomfortable. So what I would say is, you know, stick with it, give it a couple of goes. If it still doesn't work for you, you've tried. Try something different instead. I'm sure there will be something that you will find helpful. So just going to finish one more thank you to Katie and Emily, who have been brilliant guests this evening, shared so many insights about what's happening in their schools. Katie talking about her Catherine class and how the year sevens are, you know, if they have particular vulnerabilities, EHCPs, that actually they get a much more sort of primary orientated experience. And I really liked how she talked about transitioning those students back into year seven or year eight at a time when they were ready. And hopefully we'll be able to perhaps get Katie back on a year from now and find out how they get on as her first cohort go through their GCSEs. And Emily, I thought that was an absolutely lovely idea that you talked about getting your SENCOs to visit the classroom, but also how you talked about building those relationships and making sure that parents know if something's happened with an older sibling, that's not necessarily going to be the case for the younger one. And just trying to manage those conversations and those expectations. And I think all throughout that conversation we had, we kept coming back to the power of really good, strong relationships. So I'm going to leave everybody with that thought. Relationships and grounding. The weather is looking really nice this weekend, so I hope whatever you're doing, you have a good one. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.